Read there in just one second. Before you turn there, allow me to start by showing you this. Sometimes we are shocked and awed and even appalled by what some people choose to keep as pets, right? Look, if you want to have a dog, I'm down with that. If you want to live with a dog, that's cool. I understand that. I live with a dog. If you want to live with a cat, I don't understand that, but that's fine. But there are some people who live with some animals that just completely shock you, right? You ever seen those news stories of those families who live with creatures that really are wild and ferocious, and just the idea of living with that animal is crazy. Like this guy This guy who lives with a pet bear. All right, this family in Russia adopted a pet bear, and obviously they like to read stories together. I look at that and I think that's crazy. Or the multiple number of families who live with alligators. That doesn't make any sense to me. I showed this picture, somebody shivered. Yeah, I shiver too when I think about somebody living with an alligator. You'll never believe it, but there are some families who actually live with animals like this. Oh, that's my dog. Never mind. Isn't she cute? But some families actually live with animals like this, like a full-grown pet lion. And when you see stuff like that, it makes you ask a question. Why would anyone ever choose to live with something that is so dangerous? Why would you ever choose to live with something that could pose such a threat to your well-being? And having said that, I'm sure most of you know exactly where we're going in the book of James. James chapter 3. What we need to appreciate, what I want to impress upon our minds this morning, is that every single day you and I do live with something far more dangerous than any of those creatures. James 3, verse 1. We all live with the most dangerous creature on earth. James 3 and verse 1. And I urge you, as we read this, for many of you, I understand this is a familiar passage. I get that. You've read it before, but I urge you, please don't glaze over it. Please don't turn off your minds, but consider what these words have to say. Consider what they mean for you and how they might change the way that you live your life, the way that you do life. James 3 and verse 1. Let not many of you become teachers, my brethren, knowing that as such, we will incur a stricter judgment. For we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body as well. Now, if we put the bits into the horses' mouths so that they will obey us, we direct their entire body as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are so great and are driven by strong winds, are still directed by a very small rudder wherever the inclination of the pilot desires. So also the tongue is a small part of the body, and yet it boasts of great things. See how great a forest is set aflame by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, the very world of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body and sets on fire the course of our life, and is set on fire by hell. For every species of beasts and birds, of reptiles and creatures of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by the human race. But no one can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil and full of deadly poison. You know what James is trying to say in those verses? He's trying to say that the tongue is Earth's most dangerous creature. And I understand that when I say it that way, it sounds a little dramatic. It sounds like I'm being a little melodramatic. It may even to you sound a little bit corny to say the tongue is Earth's most dangerous creature, right? When somebody says that, you think to yourself, okay, I need to roll my eyes because the preacher is really reaching to make his point here. The tongue is the Earth's most deadly creature, most dangerous creature. And maybe that's why, brothers and sisters, we struggle so much with our tongue. Maybe that's why we make so many mistakes with the way that we talk. Because we underestimate the power of the tongue. Because we underestimate the dangers that come with talking and speaking and communicating. Understand that when James talks about the tongue, he is not being melodramatic. His description doesn't need watering down. It is accurate, and we need to wrap our minds around that. That the tongue is dangerous. And that's not us just being dramatic. Can I really quickly take you through these verses we just read? Really quickly show you what makes the tongue so dangerous? Appreciate this with me, first of all. What makes the tongue so dangerous is that it may be the easiest way for us to sin. It may be the easiest way for us to sin. Look at what James says in James 3 and verse 2. Read that again with me. He says, we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body as well. And what we can infer from that is what James is saying is, the tongue is the hardest part of our body to control, which means that it is the easiest way, the most persuasive, the most pervasive way that Satan can lead us into sin. Consider how many different ways you can sin with your tongue. The list goes on and on and on. Just consider how many different ways things can go off the rails when we're talking. Lying, deception, gossip, slander, filthy language, filthy jokes, contentious speech, abusing and tearing down others, flattery, disrespect for authority, using God's name in vain. How many different ways are there for us to get off track when we're speaking, when we're using our words? You know, you think about that list we just said. Think about how many of us are guilty and have been guilty at some point of every single one of those things. It's easy to sin with the tongue. And not only because there are so many ways to sin, but because it happens so quickly, doesn't it? This is not one of those sins, one of those problems that requires premeditation, right? It can happen in an instant, in a flash, like lightning. How long does it take you in a moment of frustration to start going off on your spouse or your kids? How long does that take? Man, that happens in a minute. How long does it take you to decide to let a lie fly, to get yourself out of a tough situation? That happens in an instant, doesn't it? How fast does it take? Or how long does it take before in a moment of quarreling, in a moment of strife, you start saying things that are unhelpful, that make the matter worse, rather than bringing peace? How long does that take? Not very long at all. We need to appreciate that the tongue is dangerous because it may be the easiest way for the devil to lead us into sin. But also for this reason, the tongue is so dangerous because it has extraordinary power. And this is something that we can't afford to underestimate. We can't afford to underestimate just how powerful the tongue is. That's what James is getting at in verses 3 through 5. Read that again with me. Now, if we put the bits into the horses' mouths so that they will obey us, we direct their entire body as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are so great and are driven by strong winds, are still directed by a very small rudder wherever the inclination of the pilot desires. So also the tongue is a small part of the body, and yet it boasts of great things. See how great a forest is set aflame by such a small fire. And so in those verses, James introduces us to three things that are small, but that pack a powerful punch. Three things that people might underestimate, but really do make a huge difference, like a tiny piece of metal in a horse's mouth that enables you to guide that powerful animal, like a tiny little rudder put on a ship that directs the entire direction of the ship, or a tiny little flame that is set in a forest that can end up consuming the entire forest. He said, your words are like that. Your words are powerful, much more powerful, brothers and sisters, than we give them credit for. And not just powerful in the way that they can sometimes cause us to sin by the words that we say, but also powerful in the effect that they have in the people who listen to us. There's extraordinary power in the way that my words affect the people who listen to me. My words change people. My words move people. My words can alter everything about the way a person sees the world, about the way a person sees a relationship, about the way a person sees themselves. My words have tremendous influence and power on others. There's a psychologist who actually studied the impact of words on human behavior. His name was John Barg, and a couple decades ago, it might have been 2 decades ago, sometime in the late 90s, he did an experiment in New York with a bunch of college students. And what he did, he wanted to see just how much we are impacted by the words that we hear, the words that we see, the words that we read. And so what he did is he took a bunch of college students and he gave them a test, basically a bunch of word scrambles. Now, I described this well in the first hour. I'm not sure if I'm going to do it well this time. You know what a word scramble is, right? Where you have a word and it's supposed to spell something, but all the words are mixed up. And the goal of the scramble is you got to unscramble the words to spell the word correctly. Not if you understand. If you don't, we'll just get out of here. Okay, you understand. And so what he did, he gave these students just a long list of word scrambles. But he did something interesting. He had two different groups. One group had a list of words that were aggressive. And so the words that they unscrambled were words like violence and conflict and fighting and anger. The second group had words that were more peaceful, like calm and content and nice. And those were the kind of words that they unscrambled. Now, long story short, I won't take you through how they discovered all of this because that would take forever. But long story short, what John Barg found was the kind of words that you unscrambled had a noticeable effect on how you behaved. Think about that. Think about that for a second. That just based on the words that I'm unscrambling in a sociologist test can have an impact on how I behave. The kids who unscrambled the aggressive words proved to be more aggressive when they got done with their test. The more passive words, they proved to be more passive when they went out and they lived in the real world. Words have enormous power. If something so indirect as the words I'm unscrambling on a test, if something so indirect can influence the way that I behave, what shall we say about the words that we directly speak to people? How much power do those words have? Brothers and sisters, we need to appreciate the power of our words. We need to appreciate the difference they make. When we say things like, you're stupid. When we say things like, I hate you. When we say things like, you're useless. If something so indirect as a word scramble can affect behavior, how much more do those words affect us and affect those who hear them? We need to think about the power of our words when we're tempted to tell that edgy joke that we wouldn't say in other company, but maybe in this company. We need to think about the power of our words when our spouse or our kids hear our constant complaining, our constant criticism, our constant judgment of others. If something so indirect as a word scramble can influence the way that we behave, how much more will those words directly spoken impact the way that those we love behave? We need to make sure that we appreciate how much power our words have, not just in influencing my relationship with God, but influencing those that I love, those that I speak to, those that I see and directly talk to. It has tremendous power, tremendous power. And consider this with me, thirdly, what makes the tongue so dangerous is that it defiles us and it can set our lives on fire. That's what James says in James 3 and verse 6. Read that again with me. He says, and the tongue is a fire, the very world of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body and sets on fire the course of our life and is set on fire by hell. He says the tongue is a fire. And one thing that the tongue can do is it can defile your body. And Jesus hinted at that. He blatantly said it in Matthew 15 and verse 11 when he said this, it is not what enters into the mouth that defiles the man, but that which proceeds out of the mouth, this defiles the man. And so we have to understand, brothers and sisters, that our tongue, the words we choose, can make us unholy. Very quickly, very easily, my speech, my talking can ruin my relationship with God. It can take me, who's striving for holiness and sanctity, to become unholy and displeasing in the eyes of God. And this is less important, but it is important to say that not only can it defile you spiritually, but your words can also destroy your life. And that's what James is talking about when he talks about how it sets on fire the course of our life. that it can destroy our future. It can destroy our relationships. It can just burn everything down if we don't try to rein it in. We need to appreciate, brothers and sisters, that we can destroy our lives by doing nothing more than speaking. I can destroy my relationship with my children. I can destroy my relationship with my spouse. I can destroy my relationship with my friends, with my family, with my church family by nothing more than the words that I choose. I can ruin my financial stability. I can even put in danger my physical life just by the words that I choose. James says it can set on fire the course of our lives. Do you appreciate that? Or have we maybe underestimated the power of the tongue? Proverbs 18 and verse 21 is true. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. And those who love it will eat of its fruit. We have to appreciate, brothers and sisters, that the tongue, talking, is a dangerous thing. It's the most dangerous creature on earth. And when we understand that, it makes sense why James would start with saying what he says right there in verse 1. What did he say? In James 3 and verse 1, he said, "Let not many of you become teachers, my brethren, knowing that as such we will incur a stricter judgment." Right? Not many of you should become teachers. Why? Because talking is dangerous. And the more you're talking, the more likelihood there is to sin. And especially when you're communicating the words of God, you need to make sure that you're careful about how you do that, that you don't lead people in the wrong way. Because talking can be dangerous. Especially if I'm teaching error. And so understand, brothers and sisters, that the tongue is dangerous. Understand that the very act of talking is a dangerous activity. And so the question is, if you and I every single day have to handle something that is so dangerous, something that can do so much damage, what does the Bible tell me I need to do to make sure I handle it safely? And so that's the question we're going to ask as we bring this lesson to a close. What do I need to do to make sure I handle my tongue, my talking, with care? To make sure that it doesn't do the damage that it can do. To make sure it doesn't destroy like we know it is capable of. Let me give you three things. Three things you need to do to make sure you handle your talking, your tongue, safely. Three things that James tells us in the following verses. And that starts with this. If I'm going to make sure that I handle my tongue safely, that starts with a realization. I need to realize that my tongue will never be tame. Okay? I need to realize that my tongue will never be tame. Notice what James says. James 3 in verse 7. He says this, "For every species of beasts and birds, of reptiles and creatures of the sea, is tamed and has been tamed by the human race. But no one can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil and full of deadly poison." You know, to be honest, brothers and sisters, I think sometimes we fail to accurately capture James' thought in this verse. It all comes down to that word tame. Because sometimes, without thinking, we misdefine that word. What does it mean to tame something? Understand that there's a difference between taming something and restraining something. There's a difference between those two things. What's it mean to restrain something? It means that you hold something back. It means you put something in prison. It means you put a leash on it and you chain it to the back door so it can't bite your guests when they come over, right? That's what it means to restrain something. What's it mean to tame something? It means that you take something that is harmful and you make it harmless. It means you take something that is ferocious and you make it docile and mild. It means that you take a bear, which out in the wild could rip you apart, and you turn it into the kind of animal that will read a storybook with you on your front porch. Taming something doesn't mean restraining something. Taming something means making it harmless. And that's where we go wrong with James' teaching. Because oftentimes we leave this passage and we say, what James is saying is we can't restrain the tongue. And I understand, yes, to a degree, as he says in verse 2, we are going to fall short. We are going to make mistakes with our tongue. But what he is not saying is you are incapable of restraining it. You just can't do anything about it. It's just going to go all over the place, running wild, setting fire to your life. That's not what he's saying. He's saying you can restrain it, but you can never tame it. And so what he's saying is you're never going to get to the point where your tongue is harmless. Some people get to the point where they feel comfortable enough with a bear living in their house, with a lion living in their house. Some people get to the point where they feel like they can have a lion living in their house next to their small children, and they feel like they don't have to be careful. They feel like they don't have to keep an eye on it, right? Some people get to that point. I don't think I ever could you? But some people do. And James is saying, even though there are people who may get there with a lion, you will never get there with your tongue. There will never come a time when you don't have to watch it. There will never come a time when you don't have to keep an eye on it. There will never come a time when you don't have to exercise extreme caution in how you use it. You may be able to tame a bear or a lion, but you will never be able to make your tongue harmless. Sometimes we fall for that. Sometimes we think we do. Sometimes we think that because of who I'm talking to, I don't really have to watch my words. Or because of how old I am, I don't really have to be careful with my tongue. Or because of how long I've been a Christian, it's not really that dangerous. No matter how safe you feel, no matter how old you are, no matter how seasoned you are serving Christ, there will never come a point where your tongue is harmless. Tongues can be restrained, but they can never be tamed. And that means, brothers and sisters, that we must always keep an eye on it. We must always be careful. That means that we can never talk thoughtlessly, but that whenever we talk, we make sure that we exercise caution and we are careful with the way that we use our words. First thing is to understand, to realize that your tongue will never be tame. And you need to follow that realization by making a simple decision. You need to decide to dispense only one kind of thing out of your mouth. You need to decide to dispense only one kind of thing out of your mouth. James 3, look at verses 9 through 10. He says this, with it, that is the tongue, we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come both blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not be this way. And so James says, what you guys do sometimes doesn't make any sense because on one hand, you use your mouth for these wonderful things like blessing God and adoring God. And then on the other hand, you turn around and you rip people apart with the way that you talk. That doesn't make any sense. He says you have to make a decision about the way that you use your tongue. It can't be this way. You have to decide to follow this simple rule that the words I use are only going to be words that bless those who hear it. The only thing that should come out of my mouth is something that brings a blessing to those who hear it. Paul would say this another way in Ephesians 4 and verse 29, a verse that many of you probably know. Let no unwholesome word proceed out of your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification, according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear. That is a simple rule. It's not confusing. That there's only one kind of thing that comes out of my mouth. That the question I ask myself before I speak any words is, will my words bring a blessing to those who hear? And I'll tell you what that's going to do, brothers and sisters. What that rule is going to do is it's going to take me to the point where, as a Christian, I learned to exercise silence many more times than I normally would. I need to learn to exercise silence. that when I come to those moments when the words that I'm thinking of or the words that I'm choosing are not going to be a blessing, sometimes that means I just need to choose silence. And I thought to myself, I prayed last night as I was preparing for this lesson, I prayed that in order for this sermon to be a success, the only thing that has to happen is for us at least one more time this week to choose silence in a moment when we should. To choose to not pour out everything that I'm thinking so that somebody could hear it, but just one more time choose to keep my mouth shut and not to multiply words and just to be silent. Sometimes that's what I have to do in order to make sure that the only words that come out of my mouth are words that bless. Can you do that this week? Just one time, just one extra time, choose silence rather than choose to speak. If I want to handle my tongue with care, then I'm going to make a decision to dispense only one kind of thing from my mouth, that which blesses those who hear. And this is the benefit right here of being in the second service, because I forgot to say this in the first service, okay? So here you go. This is your benefit. You guys are going to be better Christians by the end of this than the people in the first service. That doesn't mean that we never use angry words. And that doesn't mean that we never are confrontational. It doesn't mean that we just shy away from any kind of important discussion where maybe my emotions are kindled. That doesn't mean we shy away from all of that. Jesus got mad. Jesus said thing when he was angry. Jesus looked at Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan." I don't imagine he said that very mildly. It doesn't mean we shy away from every confrontation. It doesn't mean we don't speak when we're angry. What it means is that even in the moments when I'm angry, even in the moments when I confront somebody, I make sure that the words I choose bless them and don't tear them down. Does that make sense? I need to make sure that the only thing that comes out of my mouth is something that blesses. And consider this with me finally. If I'm going to handle my tongue safely, I forgot to say this too. We need to realize at the same time that the words I can use not only are powerful for doing good, but they are powerful for doing amazing good in this world. And so you look at a couple of Proverbs. You look at Proverbs 12 and verse 14 where it says this: "A man will be satisfied with good by the fruit of his words, and the deeds of a man's hands will return to him." Or you look at Proverbs 12 and verse 18 where it says this: "There is one who speaks rashly like the thrust of the sword." That's the guy who didn't think. That's the guy who thinks his tongue is tame. "But the tongue of the wise brings healing." Or Proverbs 16 and verse 24: "Pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones." When I decide that the only thing coming out of my mouth is words that bless, not only do I avoid all the damage and destruction, not only do I avoid burning my life down, but I can do amazing things in this world. Bring words to people that are like a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. Consider this with me finally. If I want to make sure I handle my tongue with care, I need to make sure that I examine the condition of my heart. Look at what James says in James 3, verses 11 and 12. James 3, verses 11 and 12. He says, "Does a fountain send out from the same opening both fresh and bitter water? Can a fig tree, my brethren, produce olives, or a vine produce figs? Nor can salt water produce fresh." And what he references there is that there's a way that this world works. You look out in nature and you notice there's a way this world works, that good trees don't give you bad fruit. And bad trees don't give you good fruit. There are certain things that there's a way this world works. When the source is pure, the fruit of that source is pure. When the source is bad, the fruit of that source can't be anything but bad. And so what James is helping us see, he's helping us see that when I have a problem with my speech, when my talking keeps going off the rails, that is a symptom of a deeper problem. As Jesus said in Luke 6 and verse 45, the mouth speaks from that which fills the heart. And so when we see ourselves participating in evil language, falling short in our speech, I need to make sure that I not only restrain my lips and try to do better to not unleash those things, I need to make sure that I dig down deep into my heart and I consider what the deeper problem might be. I need to interrogate my heart. Ask myself, what's going on inside of me? What lies of the devil have I fallen for? Why are these things coming out of my mouth? It ought not be this way. And so we need to make sure that we dig a little bit deeper than just restraining our lips, but we fix the problem in our heart. We fix ourselves from the inside out. And in that way, it'll be much easier to handle this dangerous creature the way that I ought to. You know, brothers and sisters, when I consider the dangers of the tongue, I am amazed by Jesus, aren't you? He bridled the tongue perfectly. Think about that. He never told a lie. He never gossiped. Imagine that. Never slandered. Never spoke a single word that did not edify. And what I need to understand is that if I'm going to call myself his disciple, then I can't just walk the way he walked. I have to talk the way he talked. The way that I use my words is part of walking with him. I can't just sit back and just do the actions with my hands and my feet that are required of a Christian. I have to make sure I don't neglect making sure that my speech is right too. If I say that I'm going to walk with Jesus, then I need to talk like Jesus. And the best part about that is that because Jesus always spoke perfectly, his words become the words that bless all of mankind. His words are the words that lead to eternal life. And when we talk like he talked, our words will bless all the nations as well. The most important way that his words bless the nations is by showing us the way to salvation. And I need to let you know this morning what Jesus' words are regarding salvation. He told us that if we believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, that if we're willing to repent and turn away from the life that we've lived, the sins that we've committed that caused him to go to the cross in the first place, if I'm willing to confess my belief in him in front of men, that I can be baptized in water, die to my old self, and rise to walk a new creature, a child of his, destined for eternity. And if you have not done that, you need to know those are the words. Those are the words that lead to eternal life. That's what Jesus taught. That's what the Bible teaches. And if you have that need, we invite you to let us know. Let us know, and we'll make sure that need is met today. At this time, we're going to participate in the Lord's Supper.